Jack, and Ryan. They're brothers, but they're also bros. What? Pardon? Wrestling? Well, who the hell wants to talk about wrestling? She's a horror movie. It's a deep genre. It's a smart genre. Fantastic actors. Fantastic cinematography. Wrestling is just sweating and fireworks and bouncy ropes. There's nothing inside. How do you talk about that every week? All right. Let's see them try. Take it away, you crazy dolls.
You.
Jesus, fuck. Fuck my fucking ass. What the fuck? Please shut up.
No. Master Watto is a champion.
Shut up.
You're gonna put some respect
on
his name.
Stop fucking saying Master Watto on this fucking
show. IWGP Junior Heavyweight Co-Champion.
What's up, you guys? Sean Rossap, Fightful here. You're watching the Monster Cast with Jack and Ryan. A big shout out to those fellas. Good people. Check them out.
Oh my god, what is this?
It looks like a TV.
Who is making the New Japan titles? They need to stop making titles.
It's like a TV, bro. They took it too literally. That's the problem.
They should have just turned it into a TV. I would have been more impressed.
That would have been cooler.
Put some antennas on the top.
No, just make it like a digital title. Like, you could display whatever you want on the digital
like
title.
An LCD screen?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then have the picture of the person that's the champ. That'd be so good.
Oh, fuck.
That'd be worth it.
Wrestling podcast. How fucking original.
Jake and Brian. Brandon Cutler here from AEW, and I hope you guys have an awesome podcast with the Monster Cast. What was that? Your name is Jack and Ryan? Shut up, Jack and Ryan.
Tell me who you would sign first.
Hiroshi Tanahashi.
No, not overall, genius. Between the two goddamn examples I'm about to give you.
Master Wada.
Killer Cross or Dominik Dijakovic, who are you signing first?
Killer Cross,
100%. What the fuck?
Absolutely.
Wrong! That answer is wrong!
I would.
Oh my god.
You don't know shit! Your opinions suck!
I guess I should you're welcome.
But
see,
I'll boo it.
But I don't think I've ever said boo.
I will.
That's so stupid.
I'll do it.
Boo.
Boo.
You can't. Don't actually say the word, because that's why it sounds weird. You gotta. It's like more of like a note.
Boo.
You don't fucking actually say boo.
No.
Boo. Boo. Ah. Boo. Boo. You don't turn it into a fucking chant. You actually have to.
I will. I'm gonna do that at Forbidden Door.
You just start a boo chant. Boo.
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 Boo. Boo.
Here's your host of the Monster Cast, the Straight Edge Monster Jack and Ryan.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Monster Cast, first show of 2024, bringing in the new year with Konami. Apparently, did you see this? He literally jumped up on my chair as soon as I did this intro. My dog cam. Look at him. Look at this fucking guy. I'm gonna be eating my damn chair. Fucking hooch. Dog cam. Starting off the new year with the dog cam. I put this in here for a reason, but we don't ever use it because he never jumps on the goddamn side of my chair like that. Buck, back up, buddy. I put my hands out. I guess he thought I was. Hey, stop eating my chair, hooch. Anyway, new year. And now he's going nuts like a hockey player, so that's good. All right. So, new year. Same us, as you saw in the thumbnail. We are back. Season 5, technically. Only season 2, really, of YouTube. of going to the video thing here. But yeah, if you include our audio shows from 2019, this will be our 5th different year, I believe, or some shit like that. This is our 5th, we're doing our 5th annual Monster Awards later today. So yeah, 2019, right?
Because I think we started right
1920. Yeah, well, we started when the whole AEW started, basically, when we started. Because we figured, hey, this would be a cool time to do a podcast because there's going to be so much stuff to talk about. Not knowing that, you know, all these other promotions were going to be coming out of nowhere and trying to do comebacks as well until the pandemic happened, of course. You had the NWA, the MLW, the Ring of Honor at the time was separate. You had New Japan, obviously, which Ryan was a huge fan of before 2019. Like, he was a big Omega Bucks guy, Osprey guy. So, yeah, it's like swan into like that's, I mean, and if people don't know where Monster Cats came from, the whole reason is not just because I'm the Straight Edge Monster Jack, it's because Monster, it was supposed to be like a huge wrestling podcast, a monster podcast where we do a little bit of everything. And it's not just WWE, it's not just AEW, it's not just New Japan, it's a little bit of everything. I mean, some weeks it's going to be more something than other things, because we're gonna tend to veer to stuff that we enjoy more than stuff that we don't enjoy. And we try to stay positive as much as possible, besides, you know, the Mark That Tweets and Mark That Remark segments or whatever. But other than that, like, we want to talk about stuff that we actually like, or things that we need more clarification on because we don't either don't understand or don't agree with, stuff like that. But most of the time, the most toxic part of our show is when we're going at each other. It's not really against anybody else.
I don't want to hear any more Austin should be on the Mount Rushmore.
He should.
Bullshit.
He is on the Mount Rushmore. It's not, he should. He is on the Mount Rushmore. But anyway, we got a huge show for you today to start off the new year. But first, we got to talk about Wrestle Kingdom 18's confidence and prediction picks. Okay, so before we get into our first story and the actual review, we need to let you know we started a new thing starting this year, with the very first show being Wrestle Kingdom 18. Confidence picks was a new thing coming in. You wouldn't know it by the final scores, but that, yeah, we did terrible. But there's a possible 55 points that you could get. Okay? I got 26 and Ryan got 24. 24. All right? So, not great. Here they are. We'll pop them off the screen right here. And I also have the actual overall records at the bottom as well. So,
yeah,
in red, if you look at the table, in red are the ones we got wrong. In green are the ones that we got right. And then the confidence numbers are how many points we earned for getting those correct, and then obviously at the bottom we have the final tallies. So I was on a bad streak there, guy. I got 5 matches in a row wrong at one point, because these are in order from how they showed up on the card. It was not good. It was not good. My a terrible way to start off the year.
My 10 confidence pick being wrong fucking sucked.
I would have been like a sarcastic asshole on the show and pick my 10 points for Tanahashi, because I had no idea I was going to get that right. And that would have been hilarious, because I definitely would have won as soon as I saw that. But to only give it 2 points, I was like, damn it, he actually won. Why the fuck didn't I go all in on Tanahashi?
Yeah. I don't know what was up with Gato's booking on this. It seems, it was pretty weird. Now, obviously, the Moxley pick for me, that's what, there's a reason I had it at 1 confidence. That was more of like a I want him to win thing than it was like a really like I was sure he was gonna win. But stuff like Yota Tsuji, I thought for sure he was gonna go over Uemura, and Sabre Jr. coming up right on a year, and Tanahashi being president, I didn't think he was gonna book himself to win the fucking TV title. I thought that was kind of weird. Shingo losing to Tama Tonga, who every time he's had that same belt, he never does shit with it. Nobody really cares about it when he has it. I don't know. There was a lot of weird choices on this where I was like, why are we doing this?
The weirdest part about the Tama Tonga one to me, honestly, is they announced that he's leaving in like a month or whatever. So why did he win the title? Even less of a reason for him to win it.
Very weird. Unless they wanted to give it to him to have somebody else beat him that they didn't want Shingo to lose to, I guess. But even that, that's so stupid. Just don't give it to him. Takahashi losing to Desperado, in retrospect, I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense. And that's not one where I was like, that is higher on my confidence picks, just because I was less confident in the other ones, but it wasn't like I was necessarily like super confident in that one either. I felt like that one you could kind of book either way, but I was still leaning like 70% toward Takahashi on that, so that was,
I'm pretty sure no titles didn't change hands. There's like 7 title changes on this fucking show. There's only 10 matches.
Let's see. Yeah, TJP at the War Dogs had that. Sabre Jr. lost his. Shingo lost his.
Odo and Hashi lost theirs. Takahashi lost his. Finlay became a new champion, so that counts. I mean, it's not a change, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But he didn't have Naito the title before either.
Yeah. Well, I guess every one of them.
Yeah, and then fucking Naito.
Yeah.
Seven title changes.
That was a lot. I felt like I didn't like the booking on this show.
This is like honestly. A New Japan way to do the WCW reset where they took everybody's titles in like 2000 or 99 or whatever the hell it was, where they say everybody come to the ring and give me your titles, or we're doing a hard reset. That's what it felt like. But the reset isn't even really a reset when you got, like we said, Tama's leaving. Yeah. Tama literally announced that he's leaving in a month. So he's going to have to drop the title again eventually. To who? I don't know.
You know, when you watch the triple threat match and you watch the entrances and then you see how the fans don't really give a shit about Finlay. Not he's a heel. They're booing him. They just don't give a shit. When he won, like, all the energy got sucked out of that fucking room, like, immediately. It was a cool finishing sequence.
Had, like, three finishing sequences that were pretty much a similar thing. And then when he didn't get those first two, I was like, oh, he's definitely not going to win. They're going to give it to somebody else. And then they did it anyway, and I'm sitting there like, they could have done that two sequences ago. It was the same shit.
The way that the whole crowd just got quiet, I was just like, this is why you don't put it on a fucking guy like Finlay. But if they're doing it to set up the Ziggler match and Ziggler wins... whatever. Fine.
I don't think Ziggler's gonna win, but alright.
How many people come to New Japan as XWWE guys and lose their first match there, though? Not many. I can't think of one.
I don't know. But let's talk about that kind of stuff, because before we get into this Wrestle Kingdom 18 review, out on the Valley, we're gonna get Okada versus Ospreay for the first time on American soil. And we're going to get Moxley versus Shingo.
Yeah.
Which was a hilarious exchange backstage after the show. Also, Ospreay's last New Japan pro wrestling match will be inside of a steel cage. First steel cage match in New Japan in 20 years. And they said that one wasn't even in front of people. So this one is going to be insane. It's going to be the United Empire versus the War Dogs in a 5v5 on February 11th in Osaka. Zack Sabre Jr. has challenged Danielson to a one-on-one rematch, but we don't know when that will take place yet. And Riddle challenges a confused Tanahashi for the New Japan Pro Wrestling TV title. Nick Nemeth, who Ryan just mentioned, formerly known as Dolph Ziggler, and Finlay, they brawled multiple times, once at ringside and then once backstage. Mm-hmm. But what do we think of where New Japan is trending with all this stuff that's coming out of Wrestle Kingdom 18?
I really hate Finlay winning, but like I said, if Ziggler's going to go over him, I don't mind it so much. Tanahashi as TV champion feels weird to me. That also feels transitional. I don't know that I would transition it to fucking Matt Riddle. He sucks.
I think I would have rather have seen Matt Riddle versus Zack Sabre Jr.
Yeah, that'd be more interesting, yeah. But again, maybe that's that thing where they're doing it because it's somebody they're okay with going over, where you wouldn't necessarily want Riddle to go over Zack Sabre Jr., if that makes sense. Like, Zack is like, well, we want to put the belt on Riddle, and Zack's like, no, I'm not losing to Matt fucking Riddle.
You know what would be crazy if Tanahashi actually does put Riddle over? Do you think that might be a sign to other free agents or whatever to be like, hey, the biggest star and the president will put you over here. Like, don't be scared to come over here. We're not going to make you look stupid type deal.
Maybe. I still would do it for Matt Riddle. I would do it for Ziggler. Ziggler still got a lot in the tank, to put it in Mark Henry terms.
Yeah, but I think that they view, especially in New Japan, they're going to view him as a smaller dude, which is why the global title, if it ends up being what you want it to be, where it's all-encompassing, where like the Ligers of the world can come in and win it too.
Yeah.
And it's more like an AEW international title type deal. Then that's probably why they felt more comfortable putting Nick Nemeth in that role, because he is technically still smaller, even though he's built or whatever, like he's in really good shape and whatnot. If he was, this is straight up New Japan, he'd be in the junior heavyweight division. He wouldn't be in the heavyweight division, I don't think.
Dolph?
Put him beside Tanahashi, and the motherfucker's gonna look like a midget.
But he's 6 foot tall.
I'm telling you, dude, I'm telling you, I know what I'm talking about here, okay? So, the dude would not look 6 foot tall next to fucking Tanahashi. Tanahashi's a big boy. Okada's a big boy.
Okada's tall. Okada's definitely tall. But like we're talking about guys like Ishii or whatever, like it's the same thing. Like you put Ishii beside all these same people.
But this isn't just a height thing, though. This isn't just a height thing. The weight thing too.
Ziggler's not like Jungle Boy. Like he's got weight on him.
That is true. But Sonata looked like he was dwarfing Jungle Boy in the Forbidden Door match.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I'm saying it's going to look like here. I think if this is a New Japan call, he'd be more in the junior heavyweight division than he would be the heavyweight division.
I think you don't remember what Dolph Ziggler looks like.
I definitely do know. I definitely know what the fuck Dolph Ziggler looks like, dude.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot you were a fucking...
What the hell? That's a dumbass assumption.
Listen,
I don't know what Dolph Ziggler looks like. Dolph Ziggler ain't on the same shit that Ali and fucking Buddy Matthews are on either.
Ali is on...
I literally just watched Ziggler in that fucking suit. He looks skinnier than fucking his brother. So Ali's what are you talking
training
about?
Ali's training hard.
Yeah, he's training hard, all right.
He looks good, though. I ain't gonna fucking lie. And those promos he came out with, they're also interesting.
All right, so we're trending up after the pay-per-view or down after the pay-per-view? That's a lot of title changes. Hard reset. You're losing Ospreay. You're losing Tama soon.
Yeah, well, whatever. I mean, no offense to Tama, but...
It's still a cornerstone of their roster, though.
It'd be like
losing a fucking
Dolph Ziggler.
Dolph Ziggler. Yeah, I was gonna say that actually. It's gonna be losing like a Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah, you know, I like Tom and everything, but every time he's got the never open weight belt, it seems like that belt kind of treads water. And he was a lot more impactful to the company when he was doing GOD and all that stuff. So I don't know that that's going to hurt him that much. I think obviously losing Ospreay is a big deal. Potentially losing Okada is.
Yeah. That's something that's we need to pay attention to for sure. How close are him and Tanahashi though?
Okada and Tanahashi. I know that when Okada first came in, I forget the exact details of the story, but I think it was him and Naito were at some party or something drinking or whatever, and Okada come in, said something, and then left. And one of them said to the other one, like, oh, well, you know, there goes the future of the company right there, or something along those lines. Or it'll be his company in 10 years or something like that. And they were right. he fucking ran that place. So there is... there's like... At the very least, like a level of high respect. I don't know how close they are outside of the ring or anything. I don't think it's to the point where Okada would stay in New Japan because of Tanahashi, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, that's why. Clearly, that's why I was asking.
Like, if that because matters. He's president, you mean? Now? Or just because he'd miss him?
Because he's the president, genius.
Okay.
Holy shit.
Because I don't think either one, honestly.
The thing that makes it most intriguing for me with Okada is that he's got to experience AEW a few times, and we all know he's very close with the Bucks and Kenny. So that will be interesting.
He was close with the Bucks and with Motor City Machine Guns because they were nice to him when he was in TNA.
Yeah, but he's not picking TNA over AEW if those were the two companies.
He's going to fucking TNA.
I don't give a fuck who he's friends with. I'm just telling you that.
That's why he's close with
those. That's a reason, because there's no one in WWE, I don't think, that would, besides Nakamura, maybe.
Yeah.
But there's no way Nakamura is going to be enough to bring this man over. I don't give a fuck if Triple H is making him look better than he's looked in the last 7 years or whatever the fuck. That's not a reason to bring Okada. Okada's not coming over for that, I don't think. It would be crazy to see Okada in WWE. If that's where he wants to go, that's where he wants to go. But.
Goddamn, Cody just never finishing that story of that, right?
Never. He's not finishing now. He's not finishing it now. I can't wait to talk about that later. I cannot wait.
Okay.
All right. So we're. I think they're. I don't want to. I don't know if I want to say trending up. Like I'll say trending up, but I won't say like they're skyrocketing or anything. They're like slowly trending back up because they've lost a lot of people. They lost Jay White. They lost Omega. Or I mean, Omega was earlier, obviously, but they lost. They're losing Ospreay right now. Like, literally right now, they're losing Ospreay. He's already signed to AEW. They lost Shibata. They've lost or somebody else, too. I'm forgetting the name now for some reason. Who?
Juice Robinson.
Yeah, they lost Juice. He's better than fucking David Finlay.
Yeah, they lost.
You can see who the better one of the tag team was for sure.
Lance Archer.
I don't hate David Finlay or anything. Lance Archer, yes. I don't hate David Finlay or anything. It's just, yeah, I agree with you. It's like, this is the one time out of like the last four times that they tried to push a white dude as leader of the Bullet Club, and it's just not working. If that makes sense. Like all the other times it kind of worked, but this one is just not working at all.
It worked because they
came from another promotion, probably, or they just came out of nowhere. He was already in this promotion, and then you try to make him that, and it doesn't work the same. And also, Jay White, even though he was in the promotion, he wasn't being pushed like David Finlay was already before that, and he's way better on the mic than David Finlay is, so that helps too.
And he had already been a credible threat to Omega previously.
And Okada. And then when he turned on Okada, that's why he got so much fucking heat and it was able to work. David Finlay doesn't have the Okada to go against that he can beat and then people actually care or whatever. Like, David Finlay's just beating other white dudes. That's all he's doing. I mean, they don't give a fuck about that.
Finlay is also, I don't know what it is about him. Like, I don't want to say he doesn't have it or whatever. The word aura gets thrown around a lot lately, but like, there's something that just doesn't click for me with him. I don't know what it is, but I don't know.
I think he has it. I think I like this character better than his other characters so far. It's just that I feel like there is one thing that's missing. I just don't know what it is. There's one thing that's missing.
What was his other character?
Juice Robinson's tag team partner.
Yeah. Like, as a character, he's just there.
She said, who?
You know
the guy that was talking shit about Sean Ross Sapp wrestling? She said, oh, and I said, his brother. Oh. Oh shit. The guy with the shillelagh. Who? Alright, anyway. Yeah,
dude, the way that the air got sucked out of that room when he won, I was like, they have to notice at this point that like this isn't gonna work. And having fucking David Finlay be your first champion of any lineage is kind of like, that doesn't seem like trending up to me, but whatever.
I thought it was weird that they didn't even have a fucking Japanese dude in the match.
Well, it's global.
They even have it. Yeah. I don't care.
Ireland.
That's part of the globe.
Or England.
It's part of the globe, and it's your fucking promotion. Like,
and then America.
New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yeah. It was still global. It was a global
match. Could have had one dude in there.
It was a global match.
Nothing made me happier than to see Master Wato not lose once but twice over the weekend. But he lost at New Year's Dash and he lost at Wrestle Kingdom. It was fantastic.
Neither time was his fault.
Bullshit.
It wasn't.
Garbaggio. All right. Let's talk Wrestle Kingdom 18 review. Let's get into it. All right. Let me put up the confidence picks again. I'm going to shrink it a little bit this time, though, so we can still see our faces. We're going to go through each match, give a little quick review on each one. All right. That's good enough. All right. So War Dogs and TJP and Akira. Now, TJP came out as some mythical fucking Filipino creature, apparently. And they got the win.
The mask. Yeah.
No, that's what they said. I was watching the English version. That's what they said. The Aswan, or whatever the fuck it's called. It's a cool mask. It looked like he went to the same dude that did Bray Wyatt's mask. It was pretty cool. At least it was functional, and we already know he's used to wrestling in masks because he was Suicide in TNA. So, I didn't mind the match, but I did find it interesting that everybody that wore white on the show lost.
Is that true?
It's fairly true. It's fairly
Okada,
true. Bro.
Okada wore white.
But they both wore white, though. Or both had white on.
But Okada wore more white.
You're talking about the Okada white that he turned into a different color?
That was cool as shit.
Okay, but that's not white anymore then.
But his trunks still were white?
Not if he would have opened up the robe when he had the black light thing going on. It would have not been white either.
UV thing. I think it was just the coat. So no, that's not true.
Yeah, it is true. Everybody that wore white lost.
And Uemura was wearing white, wasn't he?
I don't remember.
He was
wearing white and red.
Most of his fucking gimmick just being, I found a white jacket in the UK. So, I think
red. He was wearing red.
In the promo picture. Yeah. He was wearing white in the promo picture. Okay, so yeah, I knew TJP and Akira were going to win. War Dogs had had it too long. And the whole story of, like, all this is, like, the death of Catch 2-2 or whatever, when it's really the only thing they're going to be able to do with TJP for a while, it was like, it doesn't make any sense to have this be the end of the tag team, so they have to do something with it. So I figured they were going to win. That's why I was behind on that one.
Sabre and Tanahashi.
It's a good match.
Yeah, I mean, it was solid. I didn't think it was going to be solid, too, because the way that Tanahashi was walking out there around the ring before the match started, I was like, oh, this is going to be one of those nights where Tanahashi ain't going to bring it. But it ended up being pretty good.
He always comes out to the ring real stiff and then does a good job in the match and then walks out real fucking stiff. Like, it's just, damn, dude. He just turns it on for that 10, 15 minutes and he's good.
Well, he's got that great Kali back. All them damn high fly flows over the years. Ain't helping.
Yeah.
All right, Yoda.
Terrible.
Terrible, just terrible. Like, the match was fine. Don't get me wrong.
No, the match was fine.
Yeah, the match was really good, actually. It was like, I give it like a 4, probably. But
just the booking decision was weird to me.
I told you, I was like, if I knew that Yuya had the fucking lion's mane that he had, because I swear I do not remember him ever having long hair. Last time I saw him, I swear he had short hair. I would have picked that man off of hair alone, dude. His hair was magnificent.
Mm.
He should have won based off of that anyway. Now he's in Just Five Guys, right?
Yuya?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's part of Just Five.
That's what I thought. Okay, because I swear I remember him seeing on New Year's Dash as one of those tag matches or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was it's quite interesting. When he came out, I was like, what the fuck? Is he wearing a wig? I literally thought it was fake. I swear he had short hair. But yeah, Yoda should have still won, though. The way they've been positioning Yoda, and as you can see as our confidence picks there, like, is there anybody that thought Yoda was going to actually lose that match? Unless I missed something. I don't think I did. I thought it was a cool thing to put your two of your young dudes together, though, because they were like, oh, yeah, this match might headline the Tokyo Dome one day, which I could see that happening. Especially in Yoda's case, because he's already good on character as far as I'm concerned. Yuya, though, is going to have to work on a little something, or he's just going to turn into Sonata, too.
There's nothing wrong with Sonata. All right, next.
Yes, there is. Not anymore, though, because he doesn't have the title. So there's nothing wrong with him right now.
Evil.
He's good right now.
Rin Narita.
Evil and Narita, bro. I mean, I don't know why I didn't see this coming. Like, obviously, they're going to win. They cheat all the time, and I love Evil. But the Shota Kaito, or whatever the hell, however they pronounce it, Shota Kaito tag team, I just thought was so kind of, like, really fucking cool. I kind of just wanted to see them win. I feel like in AEW or WWE, they would have, but because, you know, Gato's running the shit and he's got a hard-on for Evil, he has to find a way to get Evil these wins. So it's whatever.
Well, it's partly that, but it's also partly that the Shota and Kaito stuff, the more interesting thing with them is having them eventually go against each other.
Yeah, but don't you have to get some dubs first before you do the dissension?
No.
Nah, I disagree. I mean, that match would be sick. Don't get me wrong. I really wish they would have won here, though, instead. Now, if they would have started brawling, like, immediately after this match when they lost or something, I'd have been, okay, let's do it. But if you're still going to act like your friends and everything's okay, then you got to give them some fucking wins, dude. You can't just have them go out there and lose every fucking time.
Well, the way you do it is you have Moxley come to Shota and be like, why are you fucking hanging out with this loser?
Isn't this the dude that got his ass kicked by Okada? Why are you hanging out with this guy?
What are you doing?
Yeah. All right. Goto Hashi, Bishamon tag team is done for now.
Yeah,
they lost their titles to the Guerrillas of Destiny in El Fantasmo and Hikuleo. This was a shocking one to me, especially because this is the one where Nick Nemeth and Ryan Nemeth came out during this match or whatever. And I thought it's because, you know, they were going to do tag team title stuff, and I was like, okay, that makes sense. And then you find out why the fuck is Ryan Nemeth even there, because he started a fucking problem with David Finlay instead.
Yeah. Again, like we had the same confidence pick on that one, actually, weirdly enough. I don't know. I thought they were going to keep Bishamon going for a little bit longer, because I don't know what you do with Yoshihashi when he's not in Bishamon.
I honestly didn't know both sets of titles were on the line. That's why I went so low on the confidence.
Mm. Well, I did. I just didn't think that they would put the real titles on LP and fucking Hikuleo.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, if it was just for the New Japan Strong titles, it would have made sense for El Fantasmo and Hikuleo to win. I would have been okay with that. Like, that's not that big of a deal. But to put the actual New Japan titles on the line too, or IWGP titles.
Like, I love LP. Like, but it just, I don't know what they're doing with him right now.
Why is he not in the fucking junior heavyweight division winning the fucking title? It's the same fucking three dudes that they have.
Yeah.
It really is the same three dudes. It's Ishimori.
Ishimori, yeah.
Yeah, it's Ishimori, Takahashi, and fucking Desperado.
Yeah, I know.
It's been like that for 4 years. Like, what the fuck is going on? Can we get El Fantasmo in that bitch, please?
Well, Dookie was there for like 2 seconds. But yeah, or Dookie, as they make sure to overpronounce it so it doesn't sound like Dookie.
Well, Kevin Kelly used to call him Doki. Okie dokie.
Yeah.
He's still Kevin Kelly on New Japan.
Dookie.
Not that these other guys weren't terrible, but the English dude, I liked him better in the color role type deal, the Mike Tenay role. He was like the dude with all the information type deal. Now he was like the main guy.
The first two matches, so I couldn't tell you.
Rocky Romero was on the call this time too. All right, so Takahashi and El Desperado. El Desperado won,
which is fine. I mean, that's we both picked Takahashi, but I think having Desperado win is fine.
It's whatever. I mean, Takahashi had it for over like a year, right? So I mean, it's whatever.
You got to pass it around the three guys. So it is what it is.
You only got fucking three dudes in the division, and if they're holding it for a year, maybe it doesn't look as bad, I guess. I don't know. Like, it doesn't look as shallow as a division as it is. If you let the dudes hold it for a year. But who the fuck are you defending it against? Like, what the fuck? Master Wato?
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
El Desperado's gonna fucking beat Master Wato like everybody else has as soon as he gets it, and then he's gonna fucking move on, and then eventually lose it back to Takahashi or to Ishimori or whatever.
Although
Ishimori has his own title now to worry about.
Yeah, that's true. He's scared of Master Wato, though. That's what the problem is. So Moxley, Finley, Ospreay. It was a good match.
I didn't like the same finish three times. I mean, it was different. It was different, but it was the same finish three times.
Well, I mean, that's kind of how you do triple.
Come on, no. What? The same dude coming out on top every time, though? No. Come on.
Yeah, that was weird. I did like that they stuck to the truce thing, though. I thought they were going to do some bullshit.
Yeah, that was funny. Because I thought they were going to break down pretty early when they were pie-facing each other out the way, but they weren't.
Yeah.
And they kept beating his ass. That was pretty good.
Yeah. I thought it was a good match. Still don't like Finley winning. I think that's terrible. I don't. Having him be the first champion of anything on your lineage sheet just looks bad to me. It's not that there's anything like wrong with Finley. It's just that he doesn't have it, whatever it is. I guess.
Yeah, if it was like the never open weight strong title, that'd be fine.
Yeah.
But calling it the New Japan global title and then having Finley as your first one is a little weird.
Yeah. And having him go over.
Unless they sign him to some massive long contract we don't know about, like a 5-year contract or something. He's going to be there for a while. Then, okay, I get it then. But we don't know any of that kind of information coming out of New Japan like that.
It's like they're desperately trying to make him credible. So they're like, yeah, put him over two huge.
Because they've lost all the other gaijin. They've literally lost all their gaijin except for him.
Yeah, it's kind of, well, that's not true. They still have LP.
Yeah, but in a heavyweight role is what I'm saying.
Hikuleo's a gaijin.
They're not putting any fucking huge singles title on Hikuleo. At least not right now.
You know what the problem with Hikuleo is?
They didn't even do it for Tama. Tama could talk.
When Hikuleo talks, he sounds too nice. Like, no matter what he's saying, he just sounds so friendly. He never comes off like he's being mean.
We're not even that far removed, but I really miss Killer Death Squad or whatever the fuck they were.
Killer Elite Squad? KES?
Killer Elite Squad, yeah.
Yeah.
I miss them.
Mm-hmm. So then we both picked.
And he's not doing anything anyway.
What do you say? What do you mean?
David Hart Smith, British Bulldog Jr., Davey Boy Smith Jr., whatever the hell you want to call him.
Well, I mean, bring Archer back in, I guess.
I mean, you could, because he's not really doing anything in an AEW anyway. They're not doing shit with him. Like, if you want to put him on an excursion in New Japan real quick, like the tag league, like, could you imagine the tag league coming back and then motherfuckers coming back into the tag league? Would be awesome as fuck. People would go nuts.
Pretty funny to be on an excursion.
That'd be so fucking cool for the World Tag League if they came back.
I like the match. I didn't like the booking. I thought it was, meh. As far as the finish, or not the finish, but the winner.
What was the other team before? Wasn't Carl Anderson and Giant Bernard or some shit?
Sounds right.
That's before he went to Bullet Club.
Yeah. So we got Okada winning, which I think was pretty.
Yeah, I mean, we knew that.
Pretty much a foregone conclusion.
I mean, if it wasn't for Sonata being the world champion, the Okada match would have been a 10 for me. For the confidence picks, I mean.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like that was easily the. Naito versus Sonata was easily the number one, but if Sonata wasn't the champion, or Sonata was going against maybe somebody a little bit lesser, like a Evil or something, like, then Okada would have easily been the number 10 for my confidence picks. They're that close to me for Okada and Naito for my picks for confidence picks. Like, I knew they were winning. Although they tried to scare the shit out of me on the Naito match, give them credit for that.
Danielson. Having already won at Forbidden Door made it a foregone conclusion pretty much anyway, but then also having the eye thing to play with, and like there were a lot of different
surprised
reasons.
I guess surprise isn't the real word. The reaction that Danielson got was insane.
Well,
it was Ospreay levels compared to everybody else.
Ospreay was them fucking chanting Ospreay.
Yeah, him doing the maestro bit. Yeah, like making them say it or whatever, and they were all fucking yelling it when that's something they don't usually do. Yeah, fucking nuts.
New Japan. But
Danielson to be that close to his reaction
during the
guest for like the first time in 10, 12, 15 years, whatever the hell it was.
Yeah.
Was pretty insane too.
It does show that there's a big non-New Japan wrestling market there, I guess, because they've got to be paying attention to WWE a lot to be that into him too. And also, you know, when Ziggler showed up, everybody knew who he was too. So it's
when are we gonna get to, like, okay, so we always talk about Forbidden Doors and shit like that and whatever. Not the pay-per-view, but like the actual Forbidden Door that the pay-per-view is based off of. Sending people everywhere and stuff like that. And you just had Regal's kid go over to All Japan for a small excursion. They say he did pretty good over there. When are we going to have, like, that first New Japan G1 tournament where it's going to have a dude from WWE, a dude from AEW, New Japan dudes, maybe a dude from TNA? Like, do you think that we're ever going to see that type of deal? Like, bringing in a Finn Balor or a Nakamura from WWE, bringing in a Lance Archer or a Jon Moxley from AEW, bringing in, you know, something like that. You think we'll ever see that?
I think the only way you would see that is if the AEW and the WWE guy were in different blocks and never wrestled each other, and that the heads of both companies got to have a lot of say in how far they get in the tournament or what their record ends up being, which I think Gato would be open to. I think it would bring more attention to the G1. But it would have to be somebody that's not, like, super high on, like, it can't be somebody that's, like, actively in the fucking, not seriously in title contention or something like that. Maybe send over, like, Sheamus or something. And even then, like, it would be, he can't lose to whoever the AEW guy is, because there's a whole United States competition kind of mindset about that. But no, I think it's possible. You would just have to put them in different blocks.
It'd be cool to see. Like, I think it would be, like, I think it would help U.S. fans, like, try to stay more focused. Like, okay, so the G1 is very hard to keep up with for American fans because of how often they wrestle, and it's all throughout the week and shit. So you'd have to stay up till 2 a.m, 3 a.m. if you want to watch it live.
Like, actually watch it.
Yeah. Like, you could watch it after the fact, obviously, but
see, every fucking year I stay up and watch it, like, all the time. Cause I work night shifts anyway. So I get off at like 11 PM and then it starts usually around like 1:30 in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning. So I pretty much through the whole June, July, whenever it's airing, I watch the whole thing. But yeah, no, I could definitely see that being an issue for most American audiences.
There's something I want to throw out there right quick. I thought it was interesting. Let's talk about grades for Wrestle Kingdom 18. If we miss our last grades of 2023, we both gave Worlds in a B minus.
Yeah.
So comparatively speaking, do you think this is around the B minus scale, or I'm like more inclined to go B plus?
The
Okada Danielson match is a 5-star match.
Yeah, the rest
the Yoda and Yuya really match was a 4-star match to me. The Shingo and Tama match out delivered more than I thought it was going to be.
Shingo's just good.
Takahashi knows that Desperado was really fucking good. Just said that you enjoyed the 3-way. That's already more stuff than I think we liked about World's End, match wise.
Yeah, but it's just the
same number of matches too. By the way,
the booking on these same things, like having Shingo.
Yeah,
those
question of booking choices for sure. No, I agree with that. Yes.
Lose. Like I think that if you compare the wrestling quality, obviously, to World's End, I think this was better. How do I feel about the booking? Is it enough to bring it down that much? God, that Finley. If anybody but fucking Finley had won, I would feel a lot better about the whole pay-per-view.
I'm just going to give it a B. I think it's better than At World's End, or World's End was, but I'm going to give it a B. I mean, that's better than the grade I gave World's End, obviously, but
yeah.
I'm going to give it a B.
I can sign on to that. I would probably go B plus if Ospreay or Moxley.
I would have went B plus if they would have had a fucking IWGP women's title match on the fucking card. Would have been great to see. The discourse on that, by the way, was ridiculous.
Women's,
Yeah, or that. Either one. It doesn't matter. They're both that you have two titles that you created, that your company created for women, and had neither one of them on the show. And this discourse online was like, well, I guess they don't know that Stardom exists and you could just watch Stardom. But Stardom didn't create two titles for the New Japan fucking pro wrestling company. They created those titles in the last year.
Here's the thing, though.
And didn't have either one of them on.
What match do you take out?
That fucking sorry-ass KOPW pre-show bullshit.
Oh, the
I do
Rambo.
Not like that Rambo shit.
Yeah.
And it's not because it's necessarily not entertaining. I hate rumbles or whatever that end when there's more than one person left in the fucking ring. You could have just done all that together on New Year's Dash. You could have literally done that all together on New Year's Dash. You could have started out the show with the Rambo thing, and then at the end of the show, you could have done the main event with the four guys if you want to do that in the same show. Not make people wait a whole fucking other day for this stupid shit. That a title that no one really gives a fuck about.
Yeah, but Toru Yano was one of the winners, so I'm not going to complain too much.
No. Don't care.
Whatever.
Don't care. But here's the thing. It's like, even if I don't pull one out, right? Let's say I don't pull one out of that. You didn't have any title matches on New Year's Dash either. So, like, if you would have had IWGP Women's Heavyweight or Women's Title on the line, or the New Japan or IWGP Women's Strong Championship on the line on New Year's Dash, I wouldn't even be making that big of a deal about it, to be real with you. But you didn't have it on either show back-to-back nights. So, no, I would take the Rambo off if I had to make a selection on Wrestle Kingdom 18. And if you want to ask me what I would take off on the fucking New Year's Dash, all of it. I would have rather had a singles match. It was all fucking tag matches, dude. No, all of them. Take them off.
You wouldn't have wanted to see the weird Bullet Club. Or
no,
Bullet
it was
Club.
It was cool in theory, but when you're cool. saying if you're Combat saying Club. Like okay, I could have a title match instead of this, I'm taking the title match every time. Like it was cool that they had their little fake Survivor Series thing that they had going on, where all these different teams are going against each other for five straight fucking matches with all your different stables. But no, I'd rather see the fucking IWGP Women's Heavyweight or Women's Title defended rather.
They usually do more interesting surprises and pairings during New Year's Dash. I was a little bit disappointed this year. We got the Matt Riddle announcement and the team up with BCC and
Chaos. Well, you had the cage match announcement too, which was probably the coolest announcement to me.
Yeah,
because 5 versus 5 in a cage in that's gonna be nuts.
They need to borrow the fucking Blood and Guts cage setup, because 10 people in one cage is kind of crazy.
It's going to be nuts. There's still nowhere to move around in that bitch. And then, of course, it's the War Dog, so they're probably going to have weapons in there fucking taking up space, too.
I'm more thinking about how the camera work is going to work. Because,
I hope they got some kind of plan, because, you haven't had a cage match in 20 years, dude. I don't think they know what the hell they're about to walk into. 10 dudes?
There's a reason that you don't have, huge 10-person cage matches in American wrestling. And when you do, when it's something like Elimination Chamber, there's still space on the outside rim of it for cameraman to stand. because trying to do like a 5v5 through the fucking cage is just, I don't, filming wise, I don't know how that's going to work, but you know, New Japan production is really good, so hopefully they figure something out for him. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, that's an understatement, actually. New Japan production is underrated as fuck, to be real with you.
I don't think it's underrated. I think everybody realizes how good it is.
I think it's underrated.
Okay.
I still love the way that they fucking do the title match thing where they zoom in or whatever, or zoom out rather, or whatever, and do the match graphics when they ring the bell. That's fucking sick. I think that's cool shit. I don't know why everybody's not doing that. That's cool as hell. Even if you did that right in like WWE or AEW, you know how they, when they do the big title match or whatever, they have the announcements while the dudes are already in the ring, so they can get the pops or whatever. That's cool. I like that. But right before that, do the zoom out thing, and then hit the like the one bell ring, and then have the announcements, and then they get the pops, and then hit the actual ring of the bell to start the match would be sick as fuck.
Hmm.
All right, let's move on. We both gave it a B. Because of you, David Finley. Anyway, Wrestle Kingdom 18 review in the books. Let's move on to some fucking crazy free agent news, okay? So we talked a little bit about some other guys already, but I mean, we can mention them again. But Deonna Purrazzo is the first domino that really fell from the previous Wednesday in free agency, as she showed up on Dynamite to confront Toni Storm through Mariah May. So strong implications that Mercedes Moné is also headed to AEW soon. Hammerstone is going to TNA at Hard to Kill to fight Josh Alexander on pay-per-view. And then, of course, we had Matt Riddle and fucking Nick Nemeth show up in New Japan. One via video, one via in-person. Like, there's a lot of shit going down right now, man. So, two questions. What are you most excited to see out of the things that have already been announced? And that could even be Ali in the indies and stuff like that. I don't care what you pick. What are you most excited to be announced? And what is the one... like, what's the one domino that you're waiting to fall that you're most excited about that hasn't fucking actually been officially announced?
I think where Mercedes goes is probably the biggest...
Yes, but is that the thing you're most excited to see, though? Like, clearly that's the biggest domino out there. That's not even close. That's the biggest domino.
From a business point of view, yes. From an actual wrestling point of view, no. But, I mean, we've had this conversation before where I've told you, like, there's no way to say this without like a bunch of people getting fucking mad on Twitter, but like, she's not a bad wrestler. Don't get me wrong. A lot of times I just don't find her character work that believable, and it takes me out of it a little bit. But maybe it's just also because I've seen too much backstage shit with her too, where when she's doing the, like the boss character, or the Moné character or whatever, it's just,
so you're saying she's too down to earth when you see her in real spots to believe the CEO character. See, I'm the same way about Becky Lynch. I'm not that way about Sasha. Like, I can believe that character when it's on screen or whatever. I feel that way about Becky, though. I think Becky is really forcing this fucking character that she really is not at all.
Just go out there and make a bunch of dumb puns. That was working out so well.
I mean, just because Claudio's good at puns, you don't see him doing that shit on TV. You know what I'm saying? Like,
Claudio is still legitimately fucking scary. Look at it. And man, I've seen that man lift 600 fucking pound people.
But we saw in the scrum after World's End that TK said he's going hardcore into free agency. Like, he's going to be attacking it hard. Would it be fucking cool if we just dub this every year as the free agency period? Like, everybody should have their contract signed to January 1st. And let's fucking go. Like, whenever your contract ends, it should be January 1st. So we can have a free agency period, like it's the fucking NFL or NBA or NHL, MLB.
Let's fucking go. And stuff too, and your story arcs would have natural conclusions where you know that contracts are coming up and you either.
This feels like the first year where we've actually got like a free agency period because of all these contracts coming out at the same time, and they're all bigger names.
Yeah. So I think that the Mercedes one is the most interesting to me from a business point of view, because I feel like whoever gets her, if AEW does it, then it really does establish them as like a competitor brand that WWE has to stop pretending isn't a competitor brand at that point. Like, they keep doing it and everybody knows it's bullshit, but when if they snipe that as well as sniping fucking Jay White and Ospreay out from under you, you don't really have an argument anymore that they're not a competitive concern. But from an actual wrestling point of view and what I want to see them do in the ring, and like what I'm excited to see, like where they go with their character and their matches and stuff like that, it's got to be Ali, like easily Ali.
All right, so, and I don't want to act like I'm sidestepping her or anything, but there's reports that Camille is going to NXT, and Julia is going to NXT from Japan as well, possibly. So those are reports that are coming out.
That's so crazy to me.
Those are reports coming out right now. So you have the NWA Women's Longest World Champion of all time going to NXT, and then you have Julia going to NXT. And I don't think either one of them technically should go to NXT. But NXT is going to need the big bump anyway. And like we say all the time on the show, your women's division on the main roster is so deep right now that you're not even using half of them anyway. So like, I don't really hate that they're going to NXT first. It's not that I think they need to go there to learn anything. It's just that there's no really, what are you going to do with them on the main roster? You're not doing anything.
Yeah.
So like, it's the same thing with like Jade right now. Like, what the fuck are we doing with Jade still? She hasn't even had a fucking match yet, but you're going to bring in Camille and Julia? To do what? Like it almost feels like people are just grabbing talent just to grab them, which I don't hate. I understand the business side of it, but people getting up in arms about Julia going to NXT, I view it more as, okay, but where are you slotting her in at? Unless she's coming in to kick out Bayley and fucking Dakota and join Damage Control with the rest of your Japanese women. Like, what are we doing here? Like, there's really no spot or to team up with Bayley. Honestly, you never know. That would be cool too.
I guess the thing with Julia too is, with her currently being the strong champion, the strong women's champion, maybe that's why they didn't have her on WrestleMania.
She could have dropped it.
I guess, but
she could have literally dropped it to Tam Nakano or some shit. It's fine. There's plenty of women wrestlers out there. That match would have fucking, and especially on New Year's Dash, that match would have been easily the most talked about match afterwards. If they would have just had a fucking match there. It's whatever, but I'm just saying, like, maybe she hasn't made up her mind yet. I think the Meltzers of the world said her contract isn't technically up till March. So maybe she's still trying to figure it out. She hasn't actually made a decision, but Camille, I feel like the Camille thing is a lot more set than the Julia thing is right now. Speaking of set, let's talk about the fucking Mercedes stuff. So we had the Mercedes going to AEW back at All In, right? When she showed up at All In, which was cool as fuck. Got the huge pop in the crowd, watched the entire show. That was cool. Then Punk leaves, gets fired. And then the reports started switching because we know that Sasha and Punk like each other. So then it was Sasha is thinking about going back to WWE. You got Trinity that is trending going back to WWE as well, by the way, that we haven't mentioned, to go back to being Naomi again. She's supposed to be fighting Jordynne Grace for her Knockouts title, which means Jordynne Grace is probably winning that match if Trinity is actually going to go back to WWE. So then the reports are that the talks broke down between Mercedes and WWE, the same type of story that we got with Punk, and that he was fully expected to go either somewhere else or work things out with AEW. Didn't happen. He showed up in WWE anyway. And then now the current contract situation is that a lot of people are expecting her to debut with AEW in the very near future after she had trademarked a few Monet trademark names and phrases and stuff. So what do you think we are with all this? Like the Mercedes Sasha watch, like, is she going to be Mercedes or is she going to be Sasha 2024? And we're going to have to get a fucking answer very soon. Like, we're on January 7th here and we know she wants to wrestle and we know she's ready to go from the injury. So, what do you like? If you had to pick, not where you would want to see her go necessarily, but where do you think she's actually gonna go?
I have no idea. There's
I would even throw TNA back in the discussion a few weeks ago until we found out the Trinity thing going back to WWE, like to make a pit stop over there, not like a long term contract, but maybe a match or two situation.
I mean, there's reasons to do both. There's new matches in AEW that aren't obviously in WWE. There's probably more money in AEW, and there's
yes, because
more...
you can have more of it because you're not cutting it to WWE,
right? And you're still able to do all whatever side stuff you want to do,
including Japan, which she's been on record. If you just pay attention to her Instagram, she fucking loves Japan. So, like, if she could make American money and still go wrestle in Japan and still have, like, go to Japan basically whenever the hell she wants, pretty much.
Well, just put her on the Osprey contract, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you just literally do the Osprey or the Jay White thing. Or the Here's Omega the thing.
And I know that she's got, like, a really dedicated fan base for whatever reason.
Come on, man, don't be like that. Don't be like that. I love Sasha Banks.
That's great.
Or Mercedes, whatever.
I'm not paying her Osprey money.
Oh, well, no. She doesn't want Osprey money. She wants Charlotte money. And they wouldn't give her Charlotte money in WWE, which is ridiculous to me.
That's crazy to me, because Charlotte doesn't do that much.
Ridiculous. She should be getting paid. I can make the argument that she should get paid more than anyone in WWE's women's roster. Anyone. Because she has outside appeal, like a Jade Cargill does. She has outside appeal that would bring eyes to your fucking product because of all the other things that she's into, namely Mandalorian that comes to mind. Obviously, that's the big one. But a lot of other stuff, too. That is something that is invaluable as a WWE company, as an Endeavor company, whatever the hell you want to call it. TKO. That is invaluable stuff right there. Like, I don't understand why they're, yo, we don't see you as a, I don't give a fuck if you see her as a Charlotte in the ring. I don't give a fuck. But you can't tell me that she's not going to bring you more money than Charlotte. Outside of the ring.
There definitely aren't as many Charlotte role-playing accounts on Twitter.
Yeah, that's neither here nor there. That's just weird. But fucking, okay, so let's talk about this. Like, if you had a clean slate and you have, let's say Sasha's over there, right? Let's say you're in WWE, you're Endeavor, TKO, whatever. You have your current women's roster and you have Sasha on the roster. Mm-hmm. Take all their contracts, wipe them to zero. Who are you paying the most money to stay with your company? And I'm not saying that you need to say Sasha. I'm not implying that it would be Sasha. But I'm telling you it's not Charlotte, correct?
I don't know.
Because even if it's not Sasha, I'm picking Asuka over Charlotte.
Yeah,
I'm picking Bayley over Charlotte. I'm picking Mercedes over Sasha over Charlotte. Io Sky's probably getting more money than Charlotte. Or around the same amount as Charlotte. Charlotte's like 4 or 5 on the list.
Rhea, I would definitely pay more.
Rhea, well, I don't know why I was thinking about just SmackDown people. But yeah, Rhea, I was on the list, obviously, as well, yes.
Yeah.
I don't know about as more than Charlotte, probably around the same amount. Like, it would be like Io, Rhea, Charlotte would probably be making the same amount.
I'm not.
I don't think people realize how big of a fucking, like, TikTok and social media star Rhea is outside of WWE. She's huge outside of WWE.
I'm not on the Sasha Mercedes train where I'd see her value the same way that other people do, I guess. I don't know why, or like, I hear a lot about it and I get that she's got crossover appeal and she's got like a really dedicated fan base or whatever, but are those people going to shows, or are they just talking about her on fucking Twitter? Like, I don't. And her in-ring work, to me, again, I'm not saying she's bad or anything.
We don't know if they're going to shows or not. Taylor Swift don't play football, but people are going to Chiefs games because they love Taylor Swift. They're buying fucking Travis Kelce jerseys because they love Taylor Swift.
That might be true, but who the fuck is... Okay, find me the... I would love to see the... find me the numbers on people going to Chiefs games because they like Taylor Swift.
All you had to do was look at the video of all those fucking blonde chicks fucking waiting outside of the suite waiting for Taylor Swift to come out. They weren't there to see the Chiefs, bro.
I think that's a really bad comparison, because they're not... that's like saying...
The only bad comparison is because Taylor Swift is such a megastar compared to a Sasha Banks. But in wrestling, though, if she has crossover appeal like that, then yes, people would come to fucking... because she's a part of it.
Yeah, but Taylor Swift isn't part of the fucking Chiefs game. This is a weird comparison. It's like, oh, this hotel got more business because somebody was staying there. Like, it doesn't make the hotel good. I don't know. Whatever money she's asking for, if it's Charlotte money, it's weird to me that WWE wouldn't pay it. It doesn't necessarily mean that I think that she's better than Charlotte. If we're talking about in-ring work, we're talking about like their best matches compared to each other.
The problem with that is most of their best matches are against each other.
Rhea and Charlotte probably clears anything that Sasha and Charlotte have done. I'm pretty sure.
The one match this year, yeah, or last year, yeah. True.
Yeah.
But Hell in a Cell, fucking Charlotte and Sasha was insane. Mm. Sasha and Bayley both times was insane. The takeover.
I think the more interesting conversation out of her contract situation is the clout that whatever company signs her gets as like being, in AEW's case, either like a credible competitor, or in WWE's case, still able to undercut what AEW wants to do. I don't think actually having her on the roster is nearly as big a conversation as the company versus company warfare. But that's
my thing is okay, if the AEW brings her in, that first shirt that they release, that shit's not gonna be number one for the week or for the month for AEW. Yes, it is. It is. It's going to be. It's going to be. And it's because of the crazy fucking fans that you were just talking about earlier.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine, but...
Okay, well, that's revenue. That literally is all-encompassing on that. But I'm just saying, for you as a TKO person, though, like, if you had the clean slate, so where are you putting Sasha at as far as giving her money?
Depends. Am I building a fucking... Am I building a wrestling company, or am I building a stable?
You're looking at it from a business, clearly. The whole conversation was they didn't think that she was worth Charlotte money. That's bullshit.
Yeah, I think that's bullshit, but not because I feel like she's got so much value. I just think it's bullshit because... She has equalish value to Charlotte if I'm comparing, like, what they bring.
Okay, and that's a fine take to have. Like, that's fine, because if they're saying you're not worth that money, then that means you're not worth equal or more than. So, yeah, if you want to say that she's worth equal, then I think she's worth more than. But if you think she's worth equal, then it still makes the same point that I'm trying to make, which is it's bullshit. Like, there's no reason.
No, I agree that's bullshit. I'm just saying that if you were to wipe the slates clean and pull in somebody for your company, there's a lot more considerations than just... She's got a lot of fans outside of it or whatever. I don't give a shit how many fans she has if she wrestles like fucking, I don't know.
But if those fans are buying tickets, then yes, you do care because you have to sell tickets.
Yeah.
Well, that's depending on if you want to have a quality women's division as well, obviously.
I was trying to think of like a bad wrestler that has a lot of fans, but... And I'm not saying Sasha's a bad wrestler. I'm just saying in the purposes of this hypothetical, there are variables that come into play other than... A lot of people buy her shirt. I don't give a shit. Oh, yeah, CM Punk. CM Punk's a bad wrestler. He's got a lot of fans.
I'll start your shit on here on 2024, bro. This is the first show of 2024. No, don't start your shit.
Hold on. Stop pretending this man can wrestle.
Don't start your shit on here, bro. He can wrestle.
He's a bad wrestler. I know that this hurts you as a...
It doesn't hurt me because I know that you're full of shit because he just had the best fucking dog collar match ever last year.
Because of MJF, and because it's...
That's
fucking...
not how those matches work.
Yeah, it is.
No, and it's not. That's not how that works.
Listen, he's a bad wrestler.
He's not a bad wrestler, but go on.
Botching shit all the time, can barely fucking move, he's got like no mind-body connection whatsoever. He moves like a fucking newborn giraffe trying to walk.
Get to your point, please.
It's super awkward. My point is like, in conversations about if I'm building a wrestling company from scratch, who am I paying the most, blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, CM Punk's got a lot of fucking fans that are probably going to buy his t-shirts and his bullshit, but I don't necessarily want him in my company because of that if he's not a good wrestler. So I don't know. And obviously I think Sasha's a better wrestler than CM Punk, but like, or Mercedes. I don't know why I keep calling her Sasha.
Because we don't know where she's going. You can use either one right now.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that's funny too. Do you think they bring her back in as Sasha?
No, right? She's going to be Sasha if she comes back to WWE. Yeah, it's...
I figured. But you know what's funny is they would do that, but they wouldn't for Jon Moxley. They wouldn't bring him back in as fucking Dean Ambrose.
I don't know. I mean, he wouldn't do it, so it wouldn't matter. Yeah, he wouldn't. If you want me, I will not be Dean Ambrose, is basically what that would be. I don't think she's there yet with her character.
I wonder if that might be part of it too, though, where she's like, look, this is a brand that I want to keep even after, if I leave again.
Yeah, like a Keith Lee or a Mia Yim situation where, like, you want to, like, that Kurt Angle, that's my actual name type shit. Like, hey, I've already built this outside by myself, so, like, I want to be able to benefit off of this even within WWE, so I don't want to be Sasha Banks. I get that. I don't think that's the case. I think she would just go back to Sasha, but I 100% agree with you that hell would have to freeze over for Moxley to go back to Dean Ambrose. Like, if he shows back in WWE ever, it'll be as Moxley, rather. For sure.
You know, that's
what... Or you're just not going to get him.
That's what they should do for the G1, is send over Moxley and fucking Seth Rollins.
We'll call you Dean Moxley.
Dean Moxley. Dean John Moxley.
John Ambrose. Who call you John Ambrose? Sounds cool, right?
Stupid.
All right.
Yeah, okay.
But anyway, so yeah, there's a lot of shit going on. We still don't have any update on what Shelton Benjamin's going to do yet either. But there's a lot of names out there right now, dude. I love this free agency period, and I loved it at the scrum after World's End where TK was like, yeah, I'm going to go hard in free agency. Because it's funny, because it's like, huh? Can't be that deep. No, fucking free agency is deep as fuck right now. Like, it's like perfect storm. So this is going to be very interesting for sure. I like it. It's fun. I think this should happen every year around this time. December, January, just a free agent period when all these contracts are coming up. That would be awesome.
Are we of the impression that MJF is definitely re-signed with AEW?
I don't know if he's re-signed, but even if he's not, he's coming back. There's too much stuff in Adam Cole's promo stuff, yeah. He's not coming back.
Yeah.
Even if he was coming back to do like a CM Punk thing like he did with Ring of Honor or like he did with WWE or like Ambrose did with WWE, where he signed a smaller contract right after to finish out whatever the fuck they needed to finish out and then leave. Mm. Like, he's definitely coming back for at least a match against Adam Cole. There's no fucking way he's not.
Got to put over EC3 on the way out. So, yeah, I think he re-signs with AEW. I think he already has re-signed with AEW. I don't think they do this whole story with his contract status in question.
Could you imagine putting that much time into that story?
And then he signs.
And then mentioning him that many times on the first promo or whatever as Undisputed Kingdom, and then he never comes back would be insane.
I don't think you'd put that much into the story without him resigning. That's what I'm saying. So I think he's already resigned.
All right. Let's go off and let's finish off with the WWE news that we had. Roman on SmackDown, it was announced that he will have to defend his title at Royal Rumble in a four-way match against AJ Styles, Randy Orton, and LA Knight. This is cool to me, even though it's a match built for Roman to escape with the win, obviously, like we always talk about on here. At least on the surface, it feels like he could lose given the quality and number of opponents that are in the match. However, he also told Paul Heyman to fix this, like he doesn't want to do it, so we'll see if that match actually changes or not. Hopefully it doesn't. But even though I think we're all going in with the mindset that Roman's going to win, I don't think it's as prevalent as him versus Jey Uso. Straight up, or him versus Kevin Owens, straight up. It's still kind of cool, like anything could fucking happen type deal. Even though we still think he's gonna win, with The Rock coming back, of course, doesn't help at all. Fucking The Rock coming back to finish the story, to sit at the head of the table as he came back on Raw, I believe it was. Yeah, Raw. So on Raw, he had mentioned where should he sit at the restaurant, or should he sit at the head of the table? People went fucking nuts. I actually got goosebumps from how crazy those people went from that, because I was not expecting that kind of reaction from that. So him teasing that was funny in the sense that Cody's story is, about 2 more years away from being finished.
We're in the fourth inning now.
Apparently. Oh. And here's the other thing about the Cody thing, dude, is that I feel like the reports that came out that said Cody re-signed, they're just going to keep pushing back the story so that he has to keep re-signing and can't go back to AEW after he wins the title. So he wins the title in WWE, and then he drops it and like, okay, I did what I wanted to do. I can go back to AEW with my friends or whatever. They were like, nah, we're going to keep dragging this out. You're going to have to keep re-signing these contracts because we've got all these people coming in that need to finish their story before you. And then you can finish your story when you're like, 47 years old and no one cares anymore. And then there's not enough time to go back and do anything of significance in AEW.
Did you see the video of him? He was laid out in the ring and somebody in the crowd shouted, Triple H doesn't forget Cody.
So good. It's so good, dude. It's laughable, comical at this point. Like, it's so funny. It's become its own running meme on wrestling Twitter. It's pretty fucking funny, I'm not gonna lie to you. But the other thing is that before Cody came in, Brock technically was being talked about with Roman before that. So like, I don't have as big of an issue with this as if it was to happen after Cody came back, because I'd be like, that's fucked up type deal. Like when The Rock went against Cena instead of CM Punk at WrestleMania type deal, like that was kind of annoying. But this one I don't find as egregious, honestly. The storyline's been built in there for a while now.
The funny thing about this match, somebody posted on Twitter, and I thought it was interesting, is back in 1999, there was a four-way match in WCW Ric Flair was the champion, and he was defending against DDP, Hulk Hogan, and Sting. And you hear that, and you're like, damn, that's some
yes, old this is the that. Age thing. I replied yeah. to this. Yeah, yeah.
It was like, the combined age was 128. And then the combined age of the four people in this match is 130. Yep. And it's you think about that, and it's like, fuck, like, even back in 1999, you were thinking those were old guys.
Not and only here, old guys, but you're thinking WCW doesn't create new stars. They need younger guys. That's why they died in 99 and 2000. That's why they went out of business in the early 2001. Well, guess what? We've been saying this for a while that they don't do the same thing. They've been having the same people. They keep hiring all the TNA dudes and bringing them in, and they don't really do anything with them, but they've got top spots so that other people can't get through. So it's kind of like, what the fuck? I mean, we're talking about a company that had Samoa Joe on the roster the same amount, almost the same amount of time as fucking AJ Styles, and never won the world title. Why? He should have won the world title.
The interesting thing about that, though, is you could say that WCW wasn't creating new stars, and you look at that match, and that's kind of proof. But when you look at this match, they did kind of make a star out of LA Knight, where he was obviously, he always had the potential, but he wasn't a big star until he was in WWE, obviously. And then Reigns, I mean,
but he could have been a bigger star a lot earlier if it wasn't for fucking Vince being an idiot.
That's true. And then with Reigns specifically, I mean, that is a star that they created, and that despite him being on top for so long, when you think about it in context, like, he is relatively new. I mean, obviously he's an older guy now, but you think his rise really started in what, 2015? So he's only been around at the top for like, what, like 8 years?
So, but the other thing is that it's because that Reigns has been on this Hogan-like WrestleMania run as well. So that makes him seem like he's been there for a lot longer. Yeah. Also, you have the fact of Randy Orton, the class of 2002 that Orton came in with. Lesnar's a part-timer. Cena is past part-time. He's pretty much retired. And fucking Batista's retired. And then you got Shelton Benjamin got released. So yeah. Orton is still there in a main event at Royal Rumble 2024 for the title. Well, main event. You get what I'm saying. The world title match. The main event will be the Royal Rumble match, I'm sure. But yeah, that's insane.
You know, I was listening to the Sam Roberts interview with Edge last night, or Adam Copeland last night. I never really thought about this, but Adam Copeland's first WWE match was in 1996. It was like pre-Attitude. A lot of these people have been around for a fucking while, man. And then obviously, you know, he had the whole thing with Cena for a while. And
Orton, you know, for a while. Why that we don't harp on it as much as the previous generation? It's because when we did that same stuff with Flair, right, when he was an active wrestler, we did the same thing with Flair. But then you still have Sting, and Flair are still in fucking the companies today as well. Sting is still wrestling. So until that entire guard of the Undertakers, the Stings, the Flairs, the Triple H's, the Shawn Michaels, until they're off TV completely, we can't really move forward to the new generation that are already old because we're still waiting for fucking the Stings and the Jerichos to bounce.
Yeah.
There's a huge overlap right now.
It's funny.
Billy Gunn, Sting, and Jeff Jarrett, they're all there wrestling still.
When Billy Gunn stops being in better shape than fucking 90% of the roster, then we can make an argument about it.
But I can say the same thing about fucking Jeff Jarrett, too.
Yeah.
Jeff Jarrett's in pretty fucking good shape.
Well, TRT is a magic fucking thing.
Magical.
So,
believe in magic, you muggles.
In the interview with Edge, he was talking about, like, when is he going to know when it's time to retire or whatever. And he said something like, I don't want to be out
there. He knew the first time.
Well, that's kind of what they're talking about, when it's his choice versus when a doctor was telling him he had to. And he said something. He was like, I don't necessarily know if I want to be out there, like, 60 years old, blah, blah. And he said that, and I was like, Sting's fucking 64. I was like, what do you mean? Just the longevity of careers is a lot different now than it was 20, 30 years ago, and what's considered old and all that stuff is way different. So, yeah, that is interesting.
No joke. If we could go back in time, right, and just do like the 85 roster, 86 roster.
Okay.
How many chances would you need to pick out one person that was still going to be wrestling in 2024 to get the Sting?
Yeah.
That's insane, dude. Like, out of all the people that made it that long, it was him.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't do the cocaine and stuff that we know of and everything like that, but he was clearly on roids. Yeah, he was on roids for sure.
He's still, he has been recently too.
Like, that's insane to think about, that he's the one that broke through and made it that for that long. No one would have ever guessed that back then.
I mean, technically, Flair's retirement match was relatively recent.
No, I agree with that. Do you think, no joke, do you think he waits for Sting to finally retire and then he goes, has another Ric Flair's last match, number two, with Conrad and all them on a fucking, so that he can say that he wrestled longer than Sting did?
Yeah, got to. I mean, he's still going to be shot. Thing did, right? I think.
Fucking brutal. All right, let's get back to the four-way. But yes, I thought that stat was great. I actually tweeted about that stat, or quote tweeted it. I said that's a cool stat, not just for the they died because they didn't create new stars narrative, but just because I really love stats. Like, that's a crazy stat, dude. Because in 99, WCW was already losing the ratings again. In 99...
Yeah, well, they fold next year, right?
No, they folded in early 2001. That's when they fold. But this was, I don't remember what pay-per-view that was, though, so I don't know how late in 99 that was. But the four-way WCW title match in 99 was Ric Flair defended the title against DDP, Hogan, and Sting. And in DDP's defense, he didn't start wrestling until he was like 35, 36, when he finally first had his like actual match, because he was a manager and all that kind of shit.
Yeah.
The combined age of the challenges is 128. The combined age of the challenges in this match, as Ryan said earlier, 130 between Roman Reigns, Randy Orton, AJ Styles, and LA Knight. That's insane. And then this is also helps my narrative that why are we bringing in Nick Aldis as a fucking GM when he should be a wrestler, because he's younger than fucking LA Knight by 2 years. So it's, there's a lot of weird shit going on right now in WWE. Like, that's great. That's a crazy stat. I love stats like that, though. That's cool shit. But yeah, they don't fucking start creating some new stars fast, and it ain't, we're not talking about Lexus King over here. We're talking about you need to bring in some fucking people that are younger and stop bringing in fucking football players and shit that's not getting over at all. Doesn't know what the hell they're doing. You need to start bringing up the Carmelo Hayes's. You need to start bringing up, like, they got to do something, dude. There's something has to change. You better fucking start making another deal with OVW instead of trying to do your own shit at NXT. Because it's not, I don't think it's working anymore. I think all the talents ran out because you've got all the young dudes that were in on the indies. Vince didn't want to do anything with them, and now they're all in AEW. So you missed out on that whole generation of talent that you could have had on the main roster right now, taking these spots. Your Adam Coles, your Roderick Strongs, your Kushida that you completely fucked over.
They didn't do anything with him.
Your Ciampas and your Garganos that you're not doing anything with right now. Like, you had people. Your Andrade that you let go. You morons. I
mean, even... Guys,
even though you're going to get them back, I don't care. You had them. You had them on the main roster, dude, and you didn't do nothing with them. You're Malachi Black.
When they had Brody Lee, they didn't do shit with him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I agree. Your Dijakovic right now, still in the NXT. Had to go back to NXT because y'all did some stupid shit with him. Like, what in the hell are we doing? What are we doing over there? The only dude that you've really built up to be any kind of credible threat, it's Gunther.
Yeah.
Everybody else is old.
I mean, Rollins isn't old. He's older now.
Older. You get what I'm saying. I'm not saying they're fucking Ric Flair or anything. I'm just saying they're old, though.
Yeah. You know, speaking of old and building credible people and whatever, what do you think about the Griff Garrison Edge match last night?
Well, Garrison has had a lot of time in Ring of Honor with the Maria tag team.
Yeah.
So, like, it doesn't shock me that he did as well as I thought he did. I thought he did good.
No, I thought the match was fine, but do you feel like it was weird that they gave him so much?
Maybe Edge sees something in him. Maybe that's match Edge wanted. I don't know.
It is. I mean, he said as much, even on the Sam Roberts podcast. So, like, yeah, no, he said the same thing about Kyle Fletcher too. But he said that he does actually remind him of him or whatever. But yeah, man, it felt weird. It was like, damn, they're giving Griff a lot in this match. That's kind of crazy.
I did see a tweet about the Varsity Blondes and Julian. Like, imagine thinking that Lexus King was supposed to be the breakout star of this group.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he did. He broke out to NXT.
He still has a chance to break out. Like, let's stop. I mean, it's still too early to be. Like I just said, DDP didn't have his first match till 35 or 36 years old. Alexis King is like 27, 28, 29, 30, something like that. Well, he's still got 5 years to figure it out. Yeah. He's still got 5 years to figure it out. I think he's 30. You got 5 years to figure it out. It's not dead yet.
The problem is when DDP started, he knew how to talk. He already had that.
Well, that's ability. Because that's all he did. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I agree with
right.
that.
Right. And Pillman Jr. is not.
But Pillman Jr. has the leg up on the actual in-ring work, though. As far as actually, well, he definitely is more athletic than DDP ever was.
Yeah, he's more athletic.
Okay,
yeah, sure.
All right, then he has the leg up.
That's not how it works. You could be the most athletic motherfucker in the world, but it doesn't make you a
good wrestler. He has the leg up. He has the leg up on that. And he's still got 5 years to go, by the way.
Well.
So now he's doing that and the interviews at the same time. So, like, don't tell me in 5 years that we'd be shocked if Brian Pillman Jr. was a fucking Intercontinental champion.
I would be shocked.
As an Intercontinental champion, you'd be shocked in 5 years?
Yep.
I wouldn't. I would not be.
I don't know what it is, but, like, when you wrestle for this long and you still can't do the promo in a convincing way, I don't think there's a way around that. Like, unless he goes to, like, fucking,
Well, this is his first real character. Varsity Blondes is not a character. That's not something you can build off of.
And when he was doing the promos against MJF and stuff, even then, it wasn't really, like, it wasn't.
Oh, I thought that was pretty decent. And I also loved the backstage promos that he was doing with Brock Anderson. Why I thought that tag team would have been pretty decent.
I think he's... And this is something that, a lot of people have done, and it's worked out pretty well for them. I think he has to actually go to, like, a fucking acting school or, like, acting classes or something. Because short of that, I don't think it's ever going to click. But we'll see.
You know who doesn't need acting classes because they're just themselves, like a Eddie Kingston, and I'm loving every second of it? This new Daniel Garcia shit.
Mm.
He is so much better than when he was trying to force the shit before and came all fake as hell. Now he's just being himself. And the backstage promos and the scrum appearance that he had, dude, he'll be as fucking cheered as Eddie Kingston, I think, by this time next year. Like, no joke.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, he's definitely connecting a lot better than during the J.
I mean, yeah, he has the sports entertainment dance thing. I get that. But, like, legit, the promos have been so much better than before when he was trying to be the fake sports entertainer type dude. With the JAS. Like, this is so much better. Like, I cannot wait to see what the fuck they do with him.
Art of King's backstage stuff is really good, too. Actually, there were a lot of guys doing the backstage promos after the Continental Classic stuff that I was like, shit, like, these would probably be on television. What do you think about Claudio's promos?
I love Claudio. I think he's underrated on promos. Now, in the ring live, he still messes up a few times, but, like, we always say, like, English is not his number one language, and he knows six goddamn languages, so, like, it doesn't shock me that he messes up as much as he does or stumbles over or looks like he's thinking about what he wants to say as he's saying it. Like, I don't fault him for any of that stuff, but the backstage promo stuff, dude, especially when he gets angry, like the shit where, you beat up Daniel, so now I'm gonna beat your ass type promos that he does and stuff like that when he gets really angry, and... gets on a roll where he doesn't mess up or anything. No, those are fucking good. Like, he's good.
I thought the ones leading up to all the Eddie Kingston stuff were really fucking good. And it occurred to me that the majority of those were, like, pre-tape. And you've probably watched the party stuff where him and Cole and Creed and...
Yeah, where they play the Uno. I just watched the video where they played Uno.
Yeah. I'm so used to how he speaks because of those that I think when he does mess up in English during, like, live promos and stuff, like, I understand where it's coming from with his it not being his first language and all that stuff. But I wonder if that's something that is going to hold him back, I guess. And then the reason I was thinking about it is because I was thinking of him being in AEW at all and, like, WWE letting him go and Vince's whole argument, like, oh, he can't cut, like, a good promo or whatever. And then seeing how they do Shinsuke now, where they give him pre-tape all the time. And his shit always comes off good because they give him subtitles and because they pre-tape his interviews or his promo segments. And I'm like, why the fuck? If they were so worried about Claudio, like, stumbling over English or whatever. And obviously he's, like, a fluent speaker, but, like,
by the way, still... same thing with Miro.
Yeah.
Miro's backstage stuff, pre-tape stuff is insanely good compared to his live stuff. So, like, it's kind of like the Paul Heyman thing on Rise and Fall of ECW. Hide the negatives, accentuate the positives. Like, that's all you had to do this entire time, like you said with Shinsuke. You could have done the same thing with Andrade. Andrade would have never been released if you were doing that same shit with Andrade.
Yeah. It is weird that they don't utilize stuff like that more. But the whole time I was just like, fuck, if they had done this, because what got me thinking about it was when he was coming out Saturday, they did a pre-tape down in the picture-in-picture of a backstage segment that he was doing before his match. And I was like, fuck, they do that all the time with Shinsuke now. If they had just done this with him in WWE, they never would have fucking gotten rid of him. It's so crazy to me that that this is something that they've only just recently started doing to sort of hide the little slips and stumbles that some people are more inclined to make when they speak. So,
yeah, the other thing is I don't think they understand the crossover, how many people that watch wrestling watch anime, and they're already used to reading subtitles and stuff. They don't have any issues with any of that stuff. I think they... I understand that there's a big portion of your audience that you think is stupid, and rightfully so. But there's also a big part of your audience that has no issue reading subtitles or having... Like, if you're going to throw out the best stories and the best wrestling at the same time, then sometimes you're going to have to do that kind of stuff with the Shinsuke's and the Andrade's and stuff. Because if you want the best product, you can have the best product both ways. It doesn't have to just be Hogan doing fucking five moves, and because he's connecting with the audience, it could be both. It could be really good in-ring wrestling and really good promos, even if we have to fucking read it. It's okay. We'll live. It's not that serious.
You could also just, with Claudio specifically, you could have him do, like, the English part of the promo and then start speaking in fucking Swiss German and then do the subtitle thing there, too. Like, there's a lot of...
You know what they should do with Claudio? Every pre-tape interview, the subtitles are in a different language that he knows. Yeah. Or he's speaking in a different language that he knows, and the subtitles are in American.
I think the problem with doing that is that the American audience won't know that it's not just the same language over and over again.
But it would be funny, though. To me, it would be funny.
And the five languages thing is, he's talked about this before. It's like kind of true. He's not fluent in two of the ones that he speaks. So he grew up learning Swiss German, which is like a specific dialect of German and Switzerland, and then learned English, and then learned French and something else afterward. But
I think it's Italian is the other one.
Yeah, I don't remember where they are, but...
Could you imagine if Julia went over there? He'd be able to help her out.
Apparently her English is pretty good too. So.
Yeah, I heard that too. Well, she's she knows Italian, Japanese, and working on English right now, I believe, is hers.
Yeah. Well, she grew
I think up, they said she's half Italian, half Japanese.
She grew up hearing English too, so that's different too. Like the way that your brains develop when you hear a language, even if it's not the first one that you speak, you pick up on it better.
Like, yeah, she's like Antonio Banderas in 13th Warrior.
True.
She was just sitting around a fire of a bunch of Americans and just picked up on everything and learned it.
Exactly.
Anyway, let's get back to the show. We got one more thing. I want to talk about say something positive here, okay? I'm going to say something positive. I got one thing. One thing positive to say. I mean, because I've already pretty much said everything that we've liked throughout the week or whatever. We talked about a lot of stuff. But there is one thing I wanted to point out from SmackDown. Tyler Bate was Pete Dunne's partner on SmackDown as they beat Pretty Deadly, and this is what I've been calling for some time now on this fucking program. Make them a tag team and push them. Bate and Dunne and Pretty Deadly should be cornerstones of your tag team division and breathe some fucking new life into it, because I'm tired of fucking seeing the same goddamn tag teams that no one's getting over from, like the Viking Raiders. Now you got one of those are hurt. You got the New Day, one of them are hurt. You got the Usos are split up. Like, that was pretty much your fucking division before.
Yeah.
This is your chance right here. Pretty Deadly, Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne would be a good... And then you got the Creed Brothers on Raw now. Like, come on, let's go. Let's get this shit going.
I had that spoiled for me because Fightful Selected sent out an email. I was like, oh, be mindful of those who want to avoid spoilers. And I scrolled down anyway. I was like, I don't think I'm going to watch it. And then as soon as I saw it, I was like, fuck, I wish I had watched that. Instead of spoiled through me.
Now we just need to get Butch back to Pete Dunne on the name, and we're good, and we're in there. Or Strong Style and Pretty Deadly literally could be two of your top tag teams for the next 4 or 5 years easily in the division. I don't understand what the fuck we're doing. You got DIY sitting there as well, by the way. Great tag team, something to do with them. Like, I'm so sick of WWE acting like the tag team division is a knock on somebody. Whereas AEW treats it like it's a fucking, like an actual big deal. That's the difference here. Like, you're just assuming that Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne don't want to be in tag team. If they're winning fucking tag team titles and they're being on fucking pay-per-views every month instead of being the joke of something or always getting beat up in something or always taking somebody's finishers and shit in a stable, I promise you they're going to say, hey, I'd rather do the tag team thing. Just put them in the tag team and take them seriously and build up this fucking tag team division that is atrocious right now.
Yeah. Okay. My one thing is from Collision. I liked the acclaimed Bullet Club Gold thing that they did, that whole segment, where they were basically like, look, like, we both kind of have a common enemy. We don't really have a problem with each other. And it makes sense. Stables just work. We know that stables just work. You know from experience, Jay White, stables just work. And it makes sense for us to work together in general, instead of being like this three-man and three-man, because Juice is out, obviously. And then Austin being the one to be like, you know, that actually does make a lot of sense after everybody had left or whatever. And it's a way for Billy Gunn to work with his sons again. There's a lot in it that just makes sense.
Yes, Billy it makes sense out. For now, but you can't have them together forever. You have to split them back up.
I mean, so eventually.
Like, yeah, when Juice comes back is when I would do it. Because then you could have Juice and the Guns take the titles off the Acclaimed. Or the Trios titles.
Maybe. Or, you know, just have Billy retire. And then after that, you have whatever fallout. But I feel like part of this is that he kind of wants to do stuff with his sons before he goes. So, who knows. But yeah, I think that's... I thought that was interesting because it made sense for everybody's characters that were involved. Where Jay White, you know, he's kind of a fucking snake, but he's also pragmatic. So if he's like, fuck, I can get three more strong guys who want to, like, align with me, and it just makes sense. So, yeah, we'll see. But I thought that was an interesting direction to take everything, because Bullet Club Gold is not being booed. They got fucked up by Adam Cole, who's like a super heel now. People really like Jay White. They really like Juice. They've warmed up a lot to the Guns. So it does make sense to be like, look, like, let's put them in sort of a weirder, tweener, stable kind of deal instead of expecting people to boo them all the time. I think that just makes sense. And you can tell the story really easily. You can have one of those three or one of those three mans getting teamed up on by the Kingdom or whatever. And then you have the other ones come out to save them, and then you just build it off of that. So
it'll be interesting to see where that goes, because I believe they're mostly, both of those teams or factions or whatever you want to call them, are mostly featured on Collision. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Acclaimed Club possibly coming through. We'll see if JY just creates a subdivision of his subdivision type deal on
Club
AW
Acclaimed.
Program. That'd be
we'll see.
Great. Well, that is going to do it for the show today. Stay tuned here on YouTube through at some point today. We will be posting our Monster Awards. Will be posted today as well. Monster Awards are coming, 5th annual Monster Awards. But that'll do it for the weekly scheduled programming here. We wanted to get all that in because there was a lot of stuff going on. Shout out to, we are over 200 subscribers, a little bit over, like 201 or something like that. So we actually hit 201 before our first show of this year, first actual full show. So that's pretty cool. We're actually shooting for 500. So we need 300 this year. It's going to be hard to do, but we're going to give it a shot. We're going to see what happens. We appreciate everybody that subscribed, whether it was during us arguing constantly over certain things like CM Punk, Austin, Lufisto, other items that we've argued heavily over, or if it was because of the Humane Society Wrestle for Rescues thing that we had in October, November of last year. Update on that. Ricotta did get sent back on the 2nd, 5 days ago. We sent him back with a couple items of clothing, a new toy, some two bags of treats, stuff like that.
Maybe hopefully somebody like picks him up. To be clear, he was a foster.
Yeah, he was a foster. Yeah, he was a foster. My bad. I should have said that. We fostered him when we dropped off all the donations from the Wrestle for Rescues event. Yeah, we fostered him through Christmas and the holidays. Filled out a card for him to help people understand his personality and stuff when they go in and possibly see him. The only bad part about it was that the person that he was in his crate thing with, because he was with another dog, that's how if they're good with other dogs, they'll give him another dog or whatever to be in there with. They got adopted out while he was gone with us, so that sucked. So he's probably like back in there looking for whatever, like whatever. And every time they let him outside, I always wonder if they if he's like looking for Konami, because he used to always go to Konami's cage, let him out. Konami, not missing him as much as we thought he would. He was more like the annoying little brother to Konami, and Konami was not thrilled with a lot of his stuff, like trying to steal his toys back and stuff like that. You know, it's funny, they would play outside together. He would yank on fucking Konami's ear because Konami was yelling or running back and forth with the jolly balls and stuff. It was so funny. But yeah, like I think Konami's happy with the peace and quiet again. The first time we let Konami out, he actually did go to the window though, and we were like, "Oh, I wonder what the hell that's about." But then he didn't do it again, so we don't know actually what if that was just a fluke thing. But because usually he just goes right outside. Like maybe he was looking for him or something, but maybe he realized he wasn't here anymore. I don't know, but it was fun while it lasted. I wish I had a bigger backyard and more space, because I probably would have kept him because he was a sweet boy. Whoever gets him will be a lucky person. And of course, there's a lot of other animals at the Humane Society as well. And we probably will be doing a couple events for them again this year. Maybe some events for some other people as well. There's a lot of stuff out there going on, and I like dogs and animals more than people. So like that's why I'm pretty much gear all my stuff towards that type of organizations. So that's the update on that. It was fun. It was definitely a hectic week, and I will say that my first lunch break from my job after he was gone did not feel like it was only a 5-minute lunch break. Let's just put it like that. It was a lot less I had to do. He was a very active boy. But that's gonna do it for the show today. Hopefully everybody has a great start to their new year. Appreciate the 200 plus subscribers, and we will see you again next week on the MonsterCast. And don't forget, like I said, today as well, we'll be dropping the Monster Awards video, 5th annual. 20 awards we're giving out. It's going to be awesome. Have a great day.